Okay, good morning everyone, and welcome to today's Police and Fire Rescue Service Board meeting. Just before we get started, have we got any apologies?
Apologies from Councillors Munro and Parry.
Thank you. A couple of new faces today. What we'll do is, just before we start, we'll just go around the table with a brief introduction. So, Councillor Stephen Curran, elected member for Dalkeith and Dunderhill.
Good morning, I'm Adele Ryan. I'm the Environmental Health Manager, Midlothian Council.
Jim Muirhead, I'm Deputy Leader of the Council and I represent the Gorebridge Newton Grange area.
Debbie McCall, Councillor for Pennycook, Ward 1.
Kenny Simpson, Local Area Commander for Midlothian.
Good morning, everyone. Leslie Clark, I'm the new Commander for Lothian and Scottish Borders.
And Peter Smale, the Councillor for Midlothian East.
Okay, thank you. Order of business. I've got a couple of items that I would ask the Board if we could consider we could add to the agenda today. One, I propose to put in at 5.7. It's a paper that's come forward regarding dangerous dogs and out-of-controlled dogs. It's as a result of a constituent inquiry, some issues I've had. Board members agreed we can take that. And also propose 5.8, Police Scotland. It's a report that came up on COSLA meeting at the Police Conveners meeting on Friday, and it's regarding rationalisation of premises. The consultation ends at the end of January, and I'm conscious that we don't have a meeting between then and now, so if we could take that today, that would be great. Members agreed? Okay, thank you. And finally, if we take 5.7 after 5.3 on the agenda, Adele's going to speak to the paper on the dogs, and we'll let Adele get back to her other duties, if that's OK. OK. Declarations of interest? And minutes of the previous meeting. Just got a couple of comments. The Fire and Rescue Service Transformation Briefing that was mentioned, that actually took place on the 2nd of October. It was a very informative meeting or briefing, and shown us a future vision of the Fire and Rescue Service, so that was welcomed. And the location of the mobile camera units. I actually forgot this came in. I was annoying Ken about it the weekend, but that was circulated to members on the 28th of August, so hopefully I'll got them. If you need that again, we can send that on. Okay, any other issues on the minutes? Can we approve them? Thank you. Okay, 5.1 and 5.2. Are we okay to take these together? 5.1. is some staff movement within the Scottish Fire and Rescue Service. It's a letter from John Miller, the Deputy Assistant Chief Officer, just explaining that the Chief's identified Alistair. John's been appointed the new Head of Protection, Prevention and Protection for the Service, and also goes on to identify Alistair Perry as a suitable replacement as the Head of Service Delivery for the East area. I'd like to congratulate John and Ali on their new appointments on behalf of the Board, and we look forward to working with everyone in the future. And on 5.2, a letter from Alistair Perry, our new Head of Service Delivery. Alistair is just in a letter, Alistair seeking support in relation to the appointment of the new local senior officer, a position that's been vacated now by David Farries. David's been appointed Deputy Assistant Chief Officer as well, and I believe he's moved up to Dice in his new role. And as part of that, Steve Gourley has been appointed as David's replacement as a local senior officer. And on behalf of the Board, I would like to thank David for his commitment he's shown to this scrutiny board always very thorough in going through the detailed reports that he provides. And also congratulate him on his new appointment as Deputy Assistant Chief Officer. Also like to congratulate Steve on his appointment. Particularly, we welcome the continuity that it provides for this board. So thank you and congratulations, and wish you well for the future. Any comments? Okay. 5.3, that's a letter from Police Scotland from Deputy Chief Constable Rose Fitzpatrick to Kenneth Laurie, Chief Executive. It's advising us that in light of Chief Superintendent Marshall's new position as Association of Police, Scottish Police Superintendents, Rose Fitzpatrick was seeking Kenneth's view on the nomination of Chief Superintendent Leslie Clark to come forward to this board. Kenneth has replied. He replied on the 18th of September and was more than happy to endorse that nomination. So, Chief Superintendent Leslie Clark, welcome to the scrutiny meeting and congratulations on your new appointment. Thank you. Any comments? Okay, we'll take 5.7 now. This is an issue that was raised from a constituent in Bonnerig. It was regarding it's really seeking some guidance as to who the best contact would be with regard to dangerous dogs and out-of-control dogs, and I think Adele's going to speak to that. Adele.
Thank you, Chair. I thought what I might first of all do is to just define what the two principal pieces of legislation around out-of-control dogs legislation are. And they're all about irresponsible dog ownership. And there's two elements in terms of when a dog is out of control or when a dog is dangerously out of control. The first is a piece of legislation that has existed since 1991, although it has been amended on a number of occasions, and it's called the Dangerous Dogs Act. And the responsibility for this piece of legislation lies mainly with the police. The principles of that Act are around banned breeds, such as the Pit Bull Terrier and the Japanese Tozza and a number of others. The legislation allows that for dogs which are dangerously out of control, it's a criminal offence for the owner or anyone in charge of any type of dog to allow it to be dangerously out of control in any place, whether it is a public place or otherwise. That's, as I say, there was an amendment to legislation, and that was one of the recent ones which came in 2010. The legislation allows that there are seizure powers, and these powers are given to any police constable or an authorised local authority officer. The local authority officer only has seizure powers in specific circumstances, such as when it's in a public place. If a dog is in a non-public place, the seizures rely down to the police force. There are a variety of penalties under the Dangerous Dogs Act 1991, including sentencing the owner to up to 6 months' imprisonment, fines not exceeding £5,000, or orders for destructions of the dog. There are additional matters which the court can attach, including placing the dog on an index of exempted dogs. Now, the 1991 Act also allows for an aggravated offence for dangerous to occur when a person is injured or killed through a dog being dangerously out of control, and in these circumstances, a person found guilty may be imprisoned for up to 2 years and there may be an unlimited fine imposed. The Index of Exempted Dogs is a DEFRA control thing, so it's a UK-wide matter. So, what is dangerously out of control in terms of the 1991 Act? Section 10.3 of the Act provides an interpretation of that. And it says, where a dog can be regarded as being dangerously out of control, if there are grounds for reasonable apprehension that it will injure a person, whether or not it actually does so. But of course, with all these statutory instruments, there are a variety of pieces of case law that have come into being over the years. And in this case, in the interpretation of dangerously out of control, case law requires that in order to determine whether there is reasonable apprehensiveness that a dog would injure someone, a court is entitled to consider the whole circumstances of the case and not simply the owner's apprehension. There are a variety of factors described in the Act, and there is also case law which makes it clear that evidence of specific and specified previous incidents are important in arriving and allowing the court to arrive at a conclusion that a dog is dangerously out of control. These previous incidents might be things which the local authority may be aware of or may have issued, for example, a verbal warning, a written warning, or indeed a dog control notice under the 2010 Act. So, in terms of the Control of Dogs Act 2010, this Act is not about the breed. It is more about the importance of dog owners taking responsibility for the actions of their dogs. So, it's the deed, not the breed. And the Act introduces the dog control regime. This bit of legislation is normally enforced by the local authority, and it makes it possible for a local authority appointed officer, and that is a specified thing under the 2010 Act, to serve a dog control notice on keepers of dogs which are deemed to be out of control. So again, we have to look at what the definition of out of control is. And under this Act, it is not being kept under control, a dog is not being kept under control effectively and consistently by the proper person, and the behaviour of the dog gives rise to alarm or apprehensiveness on the part of any individual, and that individual's alarm or apprehensiveness is deemed to be reasonable. Now, it's important to note that to allow a dog control notice to be served under this Act, both parts of that out of control test must be met. And it's also worth noting that the 2010 Act, often being in the context of a dog control regime, being about trying to prevent attacks from taking place. The law itself does not restrict imposition of a dog control notice to only where attacks have not taken place. But given the discussion about the dangerously out of control offence in the 1991 Act previously, it can be the case that the imposition of a dog control notice may be appropriate for cases which were originally considered under the 1991 Act, but where a lack of evidence existed to allow a prosecution to take place. Once a dog control notice is in place, the local authority must supervise the enforcement of those conditions, and if a dog owner does not take the required steps to comply with the conditions, a criminal offence is deemed to have been committed, although the matter would be reported to the fiscal in the normal way. Again, there are a range of penalties for the breach of a dog control notice. So, they are the two principal pieces of legislation, but in practice, how do these come together and which agency actually deals with the reported case? Following the introduction of the 2010 Act, it was clear that guidance was required to aid both local authorities and the police force with the decision-making processes involved in considering how best to take these complaints forward and investigate them fully. There is a document which has been developed, the protocol detailing the responsibilities of different bodies, and I'll arrange for that to be circulated to members following the meeting. The protocol was developed by a number of agencies, including local authorities and Police Scotland, the National Dog Wardens Association and the Society of Chief Officers for Environmental Health, and the Crown Office Procurator Fiscal Service. The protocol in itself does not have statutory status, but it is accepted by the Scottish Government and has been who were involved in the facilitating of its development. Now, nothing in the protocol affects the fact that decisions in any given case about how best to deal with a report of irresponsible dog ownership should always be made on the specific facts and the specific circumstances arising in that case. The protocol states that where responsibility for dealing with different types of controls of dog reports may fall. So, out of control dogs, including dangerous dogs, the protocol states that Police Scotland will tend to deal with incidents which give rise to a number of factors. Any bite or puncture or other significant injury on a person, multiple attempted bites, any serious injury caused to another animal, an attack carried out with particular aggression, frenzy, or may require urgent action to prevent any further potential repeat. A dog acting dangerously out of control in a place where no contact has been made with a person or other animal, or incidents affecting assistance dogs. And as I say, these are listed in the protocol. The protocol carries on to say that local authorities will tend to deal with incidents where there is apprehension of a dog's behaviour, contact with a person but no significant injury, minor dog attacks on another animal, including those that result in minor injuries, excluding assistance dogs, and cases which do not have the evidence to proceed under the 1991 Act. So cases reported by the police under the 1991 Act where the dog has not been seized, a dog control notice can be considered for public and livestock safety pending the outcome of any court proceedings. Now, following the initial investigation undertaken by either Police Scotland or by a local authority, depending on how the incident has been reported, it may be considered that given the particular facts and circumstances of the incident, responsibility for the investigation should be reassigned from one agency to another. So in practice, how do we actually implement that in Midlothian? Well, we operate a very close communication with the police in relation to this matter. And if a member of the public reports a dog control case to either agency, and it is apparent from the detail of the event reported that the second agency should be the relevant authority, the case is transferred and the person making the report is informed both by the initial agency and contacted by the new agency. So that may well be a member of the public rings the police determine it is an out-of-control dog and they will forward it to us. We will subsequently contact the individual. There is an agreed line of communication, of course, because some of these cases are not so black and white, and we can often sit on the borderline. So there is an agreed line of communication between Environmental Health Management and Police Scotland at local inspector level. And we do and often speak in relation to particular cases. Now, police officers and the Environmental Warden for Dog Control, based within Midlothian Council, are also in frequent communication. There may be a variety of information passed and shared in relation to background of cases. And this can be of particular importance where evidence of previous significant incidents to allow action to be taken by the police under dangerous out-of-control cases is necessary. For example, the local authority may, in a previous event some time ago, served a warning notice, indeed given a verbal warning or served a dog control notice. And this may well assist the police in allowing the courts to take forward a successful prosecution. Indeed, the local knowledge extends to wider than just out-of-control dog cases. And recently there was a successful incident where the environmental warden was able to assist the police in terms of identification of an aggressive individual with a particular type of dog who was then subsequently arrested by the police. I think the final thing I'd like to say, and then I'm happy to take any questions, Chair, is that the number of dog control cases are increasing significantly. In 2010, when the Out of Control Scotland Act first came into being, we dealt with a handful of cases, less than 10. In the fiscal year 16-17, Midlothian Council dealt with 173 of these cases. Regrettably, given the short period of time, I don't have the police figures in relation to that, but I am aware the number of cases the police have received have also increased significantly. So, as I say, I'm happy to release the protocol for anyone to have an opportunity to have a look at it, and happy to take any questions, Chair.
Thanks very much for that, Adele. Really informative, and I think it gives us a better insight into this issue. Any comments? Jim?
I take it this has arisen, or it's before us, because there's been some dubiety as to where the responsibility lay in this particular instance.
Yes, it was without going into any details, there was a constituent in Bonnerig who was having ongoing issues and was finding it difficult to... I think it was one of the borderline cases which Adele had referred to, and it was just seeking that guidance, who she would speak to, whether it was the police. I think she was being told that the police were advising her that it was a council issue, and similarly the council were advising her that it was a police issue. So it's really just to get some guidance and clarification on who should be contacted under certain circumstances.
On the basis of the report we've just had, I could imagine that there will be a number of grey areas, and it will be, probably in more instances than no, a difficult thing to determine who's responsible for it. Is there some kind of default position we can adopt there so that we're not in a situation where a member of the public is being passed from one to the other and actually no, it's not being resolved?
If I may just respond to that. Without going into specifics about the detail of the particular case, I think it's worth noting that sometimes the courts may not accept the evidence which is laid before them in terms of either party in relation to this. And then sometimes a person who has been aggrieved by an incident may feel that in some way they have been let down by the process, but regrettably that's just a nature of the circumstances which arise. But if, for example, the police take a case and then the courts do not find that the dog is dangerously out of control, the individual, and I'm speaking hypothetically here, the individual may feel that, well, that should always have been dealt with by an out-of-control case. So there is that issue. In terms of the ongoing, almost certainly weekly, I was going to say daily, but it's probably not daily for me, weekly discussions that I have with the nominated police inspector in relation to this, I think we've tightened up on that considerably, really, in the last maybe 6 months, probably. And that helps us to alleviate that balance of when is it police, when is it local authority. And I think if we're very clear with the people at the outset of the case, they have a better understanding, interpretation of what's happening and what the outcome may be. And then even if the case does not go through the courts in a matter which they may deem as having a successful outcome for them, at least they can be understanding in terms of why we got to and why we undertook the process in the way that we did.
Yeah, just like to reaffirm quite a lot of that. You'll see for the protocol that is, it's very grey. And a lot depends on what the individual said at source. I think we've identified we have some training issues in terms of within our call centre in relation to dog type stuff, because if they're not asking the right questions, it's very, very difficult in terms of making assessment. I know there's lots of work getting done at a local level through Inspector Dryden with Dell, and I think the case in point and the constituent probably has a valid point, I think, in terms of that she's raised, and it's been a kind of wake up call for us. But what I can give members some reassurance is there is a lot of work going on at a local level to try and eradicate that, and we as an organisation, we've got some work to do within our call centre at Bilston as well.
Yeah, there are two thoughts following on from Councillor Muirhead's apprehension that the public may be shuttled from one to the other. Perhaps the Midlothian Council website could create a synopsis along the excellent lines, Jill, of your discussion of the legislation, so that they know at what level to pitch their request. Frequently it will simply be a dog control notice. Obviously, the more serious incidents involve the Dangerous Dogs Act. My second thought, though, is for those of us in rural areas, one of the big issues that has developed is the worrying of sheep by dogs. And I wonder, just bringing all this all together, do you actually have any statistics of the number of dog control notices that Midlothian Council has actually issued? And do they relate to sheep worrying?
Apologies, I don't have that information off the top of my head, but I'm certainly happy to take that away in relation to the general number of dog control notices and sheep worrying. Now, sheep worrying, I don't know if you would like to speak on it. Sheep worrying itself is a separate piece of legislation that's dealt with by the police, so I'll maybe allow our police colleagues to...
Yeah, you're absolutely right. That's our primacy, because it's a separate piece of legislation. I don't have stats to hand. I can get stats with regards to that. But what I will say is Midlothian is the most proactive authority, and I can see that in good authority as well, the most proactive authority in Scotland regarding what we do at the peak times. And we've identified it primarily used to be the March, April, and you'd be aware we do the rural initiative. We're out in the quad bikes and we're engaging with walkers. We've also identified October, November as well, and we've repeated that because the hill farmers are bringing their sheep now from the hills back down at a lower level. So we're in the process as well, have been for the last few weeks, of pushing out that message, key messages, and actually formed the part of my message in the advertiser this month as well. So I can give you assurance in terms of prevention-wise and proactivity around about it. We're very, very big in that regard, and if it's required, I will get some stats regarding some of the people who've been prosecuted for sheep worrying. Okay, no problem.
Thanks very much. Kenny, Councillor Muirhead.
Sorry, this might be a bit naive, but would it not be possible for the protocol to be adopted that irrespective of where the public phone, given it's such a difficult one to assess where the appropriate authority is to deal with it, Could we not form some kind of protocol that says if they phone the police or they phone the council, the person or the authority that gets the phone call actually takes ownership at that point, rather than we shouldn't. I don't think we should be in a situation where either authority is saying it's the other one that you need to speak to. Is it not possible to take ownership and then determine after that which is the appropriate authority and for them to pass it on, rather than leave members of the public shuttling back and forward? Is that
very good point, very valid made. And that's exactly what we referred to Inspector John Dryden and Pennycook earlier on. That's exactly what John Dryden and I are doing, and that's why we're speaking. As I said, I was going to say almost on a daily basis, it's not quite that, but certainly on a very frequent basis, because I totally agree with you to just say to somebody, you ring somebody else, and them then perhaps to ring. You know, either way, this is not a criticism of the police contact centre. It's either way for them to then ring the other contact centre and be told, actually, I don't think that's you. Simply because the phraseology that people use is very difficult sometimes for the call handlers to determine where exactly the protocol sits. So John and I recognise that. We've taken that forward. And we bottom it out between us almost. Now, that's not to say that at some stage during the investigation the matter may change, because it may be under the protocol very clearly because of the seriousness of the bite that the police take it in terms of trying to deal with it as a dangerously out-of-control dog. But because the case law associated with dangerously out-of-control dogs is very specific about there being an indication or evidence to show that there was knowledge that the dog was likely to become dangerously out-of-control, that we may not then be able to substantiate that, and we may have to change halfway through. So that I can't say that won't ever happen, but I fully support what you're saying in terms of we don't want the public being passed around from A to B. We want a coherent... This is how we're going to move forward with this.
It's the first point of contact that I'm really concerned with. I understand that it changes once you investigate a bit further, but if that's what's happening, then I'm happy with that.
Thanks, Jenny. And I think it's a valid point make, Adele, as well, that this is no way a criticism of any authority or anybody. It's really just to seek guidance going forward. Just on Councillor Smale's point on the website, do we have any information in relation to any guidance we can give members of the public on that? And is there anything we can improve at our side?
I'm certainly quite happy to have a look at the website to determine. I'm sure there's some additional information that we could put up there. It won't be black and white, however, because of the nature of the subject. So I don't want to go away giving you a misleading impression that it'll be fit for purpose in all cases. I'll do my best to make it as descriptive as possible for people. And always happy, you know, given what Councillor Muirhead has just raised, always happy for people to ring either organisation, and we'll have that initial conversation maybe behind the scenes before we then move forward. But happy to take the website protocol forward. I would hesitate to say this, but I think that's highly unlikely to occur before Christmas, but I'll get on to that in the new year.
No, that's fine. Just as if it's an option we can explore, and if it is suitable, then it would be good to get some information on there, but we'll leave that with you. Any other questions? Okay, thank you very much, Adele. Thank you. Okay, item 5.4, Police Scotland Scrutiny Report, Quarter 2.
Well, hello folks again. I just thought I'd take this opportunity before Kenny gets into the actual, you know, meat of our report, just to say thank you very much for this opportunity to address you. This is week 4 for me in the division, so that's a positive, and hopefully that'll be you know, this will continue to move forward. But for me, I have got a bit of knowledge about this area. As you know, I am somebody who lived and was brought up locally, but I was also the chair of the Resilience Partnership Board, and it's great to see that so many contacts Having come from Edinburgh Division, I'm quite satisfied that I've actually got a whole range of contacts here that I've managed to re-engage with or establish, so I look forward to using them to good effect. I'm spending time going round the Division, for obvious reasons, just to get a look and feel and look at how we can work closely with some of the national aspects, and you'll be aware of 2026 and local approaches to policing, and that is the general direction of travel for Police Scotland. However, we've got to see how does that play out in a local context, and I think that's one of my key roles, is to make sure that we have that local understanding that one size doesn't fit all, but there's that need to get the balance between that and a corporate approach. I am really excited to be part of this team. We've got some changes that we need to move forward, but I'm at the early stages, and as soon as I have anything that is of consequence, I'll make sure it comes through this board. I think it might be helpful maybe in the new year if the chairs of the scrutiny to come, we could all meet together and I could ask John Hawkins or the like to come and have a chat, and that way we could even probably work together just about, because there is a lot of change still out there, and it's about making sure people are well informed and have an understanding. So other than that, I shall pass on to the real expert, which is Kenny, who has all the information, but I am looking forward to working with you all, and thank you again.
Thank you very much for that, Leslie, and you're very welcome at this board as well. Thank you. Kenny.
Okay, morning, folks. I've been called many things in the past, but never an expert. You'll see today a different feel. I spoke at the last meeting that there was going to be a different approach to it, which coincided with the publication of the local police plans, which have now been uploaded and on the website, which was approved at full council in August. And this one, as we move forward, everything's outcome-focused, and you'll see a complete change moving away from stats, figures, or there are some in there, more about what we're actually doing in terms of trying to achieve longer-term outcomes. What I would like feedback from board members in terms of the thought process, what you would like to see. Is there any tweaks or changes that need made on the report? As I say, this is the first one, so it's your opportunity to give us that feedback at the end. But if you bear with me, I'll take you through the bones of it. Starting on page 13, you'll see your intention, adults at risk. Our intention there, which is strongly aligned to the adult and social care principles within the community planning partnership. Key points for me is it's good to see a decrease in the number of adults that have been reported missing, but you will see in there that there are a significant number of individuals that have been reported who have identified vulnerabilities, and quite a number as well who are cared for adults. Within the terms of what we're doing or what we're trying to achieve, a lot of proactive work being done by our missing person coordinator. Midlothian was one of the pilot areas for the elderly care homes in working with individuals and identifying high-risk individuals in terms of if they did get reported missing. We had a lot of information on site that the care home could give us at that port of call. That's worked really, really well. We've done that in about two or three of the care homes within Midlothian and identified some vulnerable people in there. We're keen as well to move on and develop neighbourhood watch schemes in particular, and stuff from about identifying vulnerable individuals within our local communities and what can be done. You'll see a lot of stuff in there that we're doing around about financial elements, scams, bogus callers, which again, in the current climate, whilst we maybe only had two, I have to say there's been a lot averted, and that's through good diligence within the community, and we're hoping to try and enhance that and keep that going through supporting schemes such as Operation Monarda, which is a national bogus workman initiative. But probably more importantly for us, we're looking at specific stuff. You'll see in there I've highlighted the call blocker initiative. That's us working very close to the Scottish Business Resilience Centre. The call blocker is working in other authority areas, and they've agreed that we can look at that and try and implement that within Midlothian. And developing the alert network with financial establishments. In fact, to say we've had a lot of really good work with the banks, and the banks being proactive in identifying individuals that are coming in, vulnerable individuals coming in to withdraw money, normally escorted by the the bogey workman type stuff, who have maybe given them a price for a job at £150 and then told them, actually, I'm looking for another £500. Banks have been pretty good so far in terms of actually identifying that and alerting us to it, so and averting that individual. So there's a lot of work ongoing in this particular area, and I'll give credit to Ian Jeffrey, who is my prevention holder in this regard. He's doing a lot of work with our partners and trading standards and things in moving this whole agenda forward. If I could take members through to page 15, which is probably the biggest part of this, and this is the bit where we fit within the community planning partnership with community safety and community justice. Again, lots of really good work taking place in this arena. Highlights for me is the domestic abuse recorded incidents. Domestic abuse for the first 6 months of the year are down 11% for last year, which is always pleasing. Hate crime, as you'll see, it's risen there. It says it's risen there 24% year to date, as opposed to this time last year, an increase of 10 incidents. That certainly, since that point in time, the gap has narrowed. But what I do want to point out in here is that, for me, having, and this is an area of business where we provide real scrutiny to it, I would say I probably only have one, I've identified one real vulnerable individual, and there's been, I'll reflect it later on in the report, who I would say has actually been specifically targeted. Lots of others are in there. You'll see at point of sale at shops, neighbour disputes. There's been a number of neighbour disputes, and it's been off the cuff throwaway remarks as opposed to anything deeply sinister. And my own officers are subject to quite a bit of abuse by individuals at the point of arrest. Antisocial behaviour. I spoke at the last board and said that this is one of the probably the most challenging thing I have at the moment, but I'm pleased to say that in terms of overall incidents, whilst it says it's 7% year to date, at one point we were over 15% up on the previous year, so the gap is narrowing and it continues to narrow. However, the youth element of that is again the most problematic. You'll see youth calls increase 17% in the first 6 months as opposed to the opposing period last year. It is a challenge, but we are doing a lot of work in that regard. We've created a new kind of structure round about the more challenging youths within the Midlothian in terms of meeting with our partners and looking at specific interventions for these higher tariff individuals. Drug supply, yeah, it is down on the previous year, and I think I touched the last time as well. It's one of the key things for me in terms of the introduction of the community action teams, in terms of actually getting right in amongst individuals and with the intelligence that's coming through for your community, acting upon that, and I see that as a key function when they hit the ground running in December. And I think we'll see a sea change in that in the last 4 months of the year. I'm pretty confident we can address that issue. House break-ins, really positive picture in terms of domestic house break-ins, as reflected the last time. You'll see there, first 6 months, 39% reduction. The posing period, and it's down below the two-year average as well. If you're just looking in year on year, you can get peaks and troughs, so it's always quite good to look at that longer-term picture, and domestic house break-ins are going the right way. And I can also tell you in terms of detection rates as well, we're sitting at 54.5% in terms of detection rates, which is well above the national average in actually detecting those. Dishonesty crime, it's a challenge, but in terms of the shoplifting plays a significant part in that figure in overall increase in acquisitive crime. Shoplifting, it's in there, increased 56% year to date. I can tell you at the moment we're about 65% up, but a lot of that is to do with the work that we're doing with retailers. We're actively encouraging them to come forward. Lots of retailers previously, their thresholds were ridiculous for me in terms of reporting shoplifting, or their non-reporting of shoplifting, as the case may be. But we're trying to develop retail partnerships, both in Dalkeith Town Centre and at Streatham Retail, and we're having a lot of success in that regard. But we're telling them if they've got to come forward and tell us, report stuff. If there are recidivist offenders, we want to be dealing with recidivist offenders, both through the court process and also looking at longer term issues around about attaining criminal antisocial behaviour orders for these individuals. So lots of that increase in reporting has came through us actually telling shopkeepers and retailers to actually start reporting things. If we don't know about it, we can't do anything with it. But we're making big inroads in terms of developing these retail crime partnerships, which I'm hoping longer term will have a significant difference. Serious violence, it's a positive picture. You'll see in there, significantly down in terms of serious violent crime as we were last year, and probably more importantly for me is that in terms of common assaults or minor assaults, it's also down. So in terms of violence wise, it's a positive picture. And in terms of detection rates for serious violent crimes, we're sitting at 91.9%, which is a pretty healthy figure with that regard. And our roads, again, it's a positive picture in terms of road casualties. You'll see 23 people killed or seriously injured in roads. It's 23 people too many. I absolutely acknowledge that. But it's fewer than last year. And when you look at the picture in terms of actual fatalities, four fatalities down at this time to what we were last year, and an overall reduction of a third of the number of people who suffered minor injuries. So that's a really positive picture in terms of the road casualties and road safety figures. I'm not going to go through individual-wise. I'm just going to highlight some proactive, preventative stuff that we are doing in there. The community engagement vehicle in Dander Hall, Chair, as you'll be aware, a lot of work being done in Dander Hall to address the issue with youths there. I think we've had some fairly good successes. And the community engagement vehicle was just that high visibility aspect of it, and there's been pretty good engagement, I have to say, with Grant Gray and Jordan Powell, my community beat officers, who are in there on a regular basis and in trying to encourage people to come forward and tell us what the issues are. And it's our thought process that will get rolled out to other problematic areas that we've identified throughout Midlothian. You'll see that we're doing stuff around about the launch of Your Asking For It campaign to tackle the issue of proxy alcohol purchases. This was something that we've identified for North Lanarkshire. There's an initiative that they run to really good effect, and it's with plans. I think that retailers are now far better through the Challenge 25, that they're not selling to underagers as such. So proxy purchase is the next thing that we're going to be taking on, and we're hoping to get that rolled out next year at some point. Food bank referrals, again, you'd say about police, would police ever refer anybody for food bank referrals? Yes, we do. We're going through homes and dealing with individuals on a regular basis who are at the point of crisis, and we have a direct referral process now through the Trussell Trust, and it's something that we're looking to expand to try and help individuals and also break that cycle of criminality. We had the Tomorrow's Driver event regarding S5, S6 pupils in Midlothian, and for the first time this year, Kevin, I'm right in saying that we actually took them out in schools as opposed to it being a central venue, one to try and get as more people through it, and also in terms of efficiency savings wise, it certainly helped the budget overall. We're having it within the school environment. We'll wait and see what the evaluations throw back, but it's certainly something quite different that we've tried this year. Hopefully it'll evaluate well, and that'll be something that will continue. Moving on to the child protection aspect, in page 18. Again, this is sort of us aligning ourselves with what we're doing in contributing towards the GIRFEC element of the community planning partnership. See that the number of children reported missing has increased by 52%. It's a significant figure, folks, for 240, up to 242 for 159 the year before. You've heard us speaking quite a lot about the 80-20 split. Only 20% of your time now is actually dealing with crime. 80% is dealing with other areas of business. Missing people are a significant part of that. Young people in particular, you'll see that increase. Any youngster that goes missing comes with a degree of risk, and we need to resource that accordingly. On a proactive front, though, again, our missing person coordinator has done a lot of work, particularly with the young offender units that exist throughout Midlothian, because there was a disproportionate number of people going missing from these units, and I have to say certainly in the last couple of months I've seen a significant improvement in that, and that's just through better arrangements, tighter arrangements with our partners within the units, and I appointed single points of contact. So our local community officer has a single point of contact with every single unit that we have now within Midlothian, and we're starting to see the benefits of having that. The one bit in terms of what we're doing next that we'd like to speak about, and it's something that we're keen to push on with, is the Not Yours to Share campaign. This was a national campaign which is around about making it an offence now through the cybercrime social media to be sending explicit or sexualised content via that. I think in terms of an organisation, the campaign was run and every single thing that was, every picture or anything that was promoted through it actually had an adult at the end of the phone, where actually, as we know and we experience on a daily basis, the number of young people who are now getting caught into that cycle. So what we're trying to adopt here is actually trying to get a wee campaign going that has young. It's actually specifically pitched at school-age people, and I'm hopeful that will take part in the early part of next year. And also the progression of the missing person protocol with Midlothian schools. We're doing a lot of work with the schools based on the experience for our counterparts in Edinburgh who done something similar in terms of actually getting a greater understanding of when a child is actually missing or when a child is truanting. So there's a lot of work to be done in that regard. I'm happy there's charts at the back there which reflect incidents and stats and things, but I'm happy at this point in time, Chair, to take any questions that any members may well have.
Thanks very much for that detailed report, Kenny. I'll just start just one question on the format of the report, and I know it's a new report, and as we move on, would it be possible if members would find it advantageous to have the performance indicator charts in the main body of the report? I'm just thinking in terms of digital devices rather than flicking pages and having it as you read it, you can actually see the graph as well. Do you find that useful? Yeah. Thanks, Kenny. Any questions or comments? All right. I'll just touch on a couple of things, Kenny. Really good initiative, the Alert Network Financial Establishments with the banks. Very much welcomed. I think that's a great initiative. Dander Hall, probably abuse my position as chair here, but it's my ward, and I do have quite a lot of engagement at Dander Hall, and I know that the local officers, PC Powell and PC Gray, are doing some fantastic work there, and particularly in terms of the community engagement vehicle. It's been a huge success and it's been very much welcome in the community. And that's it. No more questions or comments? Okay, thanks very much, Kerry. 5.5, Scottish Fire and Rescue Service Local Plan Performance, Quarter 2. Steve.
Thank you, Chair. Just want to start with an apology. Obviously, my coughing might interrupt what we're doing this morning. First of all, I just want to say how delighted I am in picking up the post that David left when he was promoted and to be able to continue working with partners and colleagues in Midlothian, and to take our organisation and the community forward as they sort of progress, particularly for us through our transformation journey. I would like to thank the Chair for hosting that transformation piece that we did with David a few weeks back. It's absolutely where we need to go as an organisation. And it would be wrong of me not to touch on that transformation journey as it stands just now. There's been a little bit of media attention around it fairly recently. It is only the start of the conversation. We will have a more formal consultation kicking off early in the new year, and that will be the point where there will be some further discussion around what we're planning to do. Clearly, the financial settlement from government has a big part to play in how we can move this forward, and until we know what's happening with that, which hopefully will be in the next few weeks, things are sort of on hold just now. albeit in Midlothian, and as I'll touch on later on, we're already doing some of the transformation work anyway. We've piloted some of it, and that's on the agenda later on, so I'll leave that where it is just now. In terms of our local community fire and rescue service plan, the consultation is live, and it will be until the 18th of December, so just as almost a reminder that we really need to hear what the local community and yourselves as elected members have to say about what our plans are going forward. It is absolutely linked to our transformation agenda, and I think it's future-proofed in that respect, and also it will link closely, and if you remember back to why we delayed our plan being reviewed, is it so that it can link very closely with the Midlothian community plan as well. I think that's all I really want to say on those sort of slightly more strategic issues. I did want to highlight, and there may be some questions around, we did have an unfortunate attack on a couple of our firefighters at Lawfield Farm last Friday night, and obviously a significant fire at Paradykes Primary on the Saturday as well. Time of year, and it links very much to the issues that Kenny's talked about in terms of young people and some of the issues that we have been seeing in the area for some time. But without, obviously, the support of our partners right across Midlothian, it's an issue that we're going to keep seeing. So I would urge the board to keep an eye on what we're doing around our youth engagement, and that's something I'll come back to later on as well. So I'm just going to hand over to Dean, who's going to take you through the performance report. Happy to take any questions now, or we can just leave them till after Dean's. Happy either way.
Thanks very much, Steve. Any questions or comments at the moment? Okay, Dean.
Thank you, Chair. I'm not going to go through the report like Kenny, line by line, but I'll pick out the sort of key aspects of it. I'll begin on page 25 of the document pack, which shows our performance indicator chart, which is a red, amber, green sort of graph at the top, showing us that we're on target in four areas, but off target for fire casualties and deliberate fires, which is just what we've been talking about in terms of antisocial behaviour through Kenny and Steve there. Year to date, we responded to 803 incidents in Midlothian, which is an increase of 107 for the first 6 months of this year. So take you on to page 28, which is the reduction in accidental dwelling fires. During this quarter two, we responded to 14 accidental dwelling fires, which is a decrease of seven across the area. And we're slightly below the East and Scottish service delivery area trend lines. 86% of the fires occurred in single occupancy households, and 42% of that number, so almost half of that number, were in the over 65 category. It's probably this probably appears in every report, maybe not as much as 42%, but it just shows you that highlighting single occupancy households, so referrals from our partners that come forward for single occupancy households and people over the age of 65 is really, really important to us. The more action we take in these houses, the likelihood we've got of reducing the number of domestic dwelling fires in Midlothian. I mean, 86% single occupancy households and half of that number over 65s is the areas we need to get in. So urge anybody in organisations and anybody in the council who work in departments to go through the referral process for any people in these categories. It really is important to us to get in there. Cooking was 50% of the of the fires were attributed to cooking, and 86% of the fires were confined to the room of origin, which means that the smoke detector was again early intervention as far as alerting the occupant to the fire was concerned. 93% of the houses actually had smoke detectors in them. Obviously, we wouldn't leave a house fire without fitting smoke detectors, so all of those houses that never had smoke detectors would have smoke detectors in them now. During the period, we conducted 267 home fire safety visits, where we fitted 63 properties with smoke detection. Over to page 30, which is our fire casualties. During the period, we dealt with 8 fire casualties, none of which were fatalities, which was an increase of 4 in the same reporting period last year. The 8 casualties were a result of 2 house fires. One house fire actually had 7 fire casualties, one of which had, I think 5 of which were taken to hospital, one of which was given oxygen at the scene, another one had more serious burn injuries. Both attributed to cooking and smoking. One was smoking, one was cooking, but there were 7 casualties. That's why our casualties are so high in this period. Although 8's not a high number, 7 casualties and 1 fire was quite significant. So it's quite a serious fire. 7 people receiving various forms of treatment at the scene and in hospitals. Page 32 is our deliberate dwelling fires. Pleasing to see this period that there was 6, well, it's not pleasing to see there's 60 deliberate fires. However, that's decreased by 47 in comparison to the same reporting period from last year. And it's a huge drop from the 202 deliberate fires we had in quarter one of this year. 202 down to 60, very significant. And I think I'm sure a lot of that is down to the multi-agency working, the partnership working on antisocial behaviour that Kenny's touched on. We know ourselves that in quarter one, we had a lot of contact with young firefighters. We've done a lot of one-to-one contact sessions, and the fact that through the weekly TAC meetings, the analyst and the police identify and ourselves identify hotspots, and we continue to work around these hotspots. Our crews are actively involved with the Y2K project in Mayfield, so we are getting there, but at times we have a dry period and lots of activity with Facebook and Snapchat and everything, which can see significant rises in fires in the areas. 78% of the deliberate fires were deliberate seconded fires. 13% were unfortunately fires against buildings, which is a slight increase on what we normally have. Needless to say, we're working hard on that, and we are early intervention for us through schools, through community groups, etc., is really important, and we're working. Our firefighters and community action teams put a lot of work in these areas, and hopefully we'll keep those numbers down. I'm not going to touch on RTCs on page 34. Kenny's touched on that there, and we've nothing to add to what he's said. Special service calls, we attended 17 fatal and non-fatal casualties during this period. We had 9 non-fatal casualties and 1 fatal at RTC, and we had 6 non-fatal and 1 fatal at other emergency response incidents, the special services that we attend. There's a decrease of 1 casualty over that period. And then the last one is unwanted fire alarm signals. We attended 86, which is a decrease in 13 of the period. The pleasing thing for Midlothian is we tend always to be on the unwanted fire alarm signals. We tend always to be below the Scottish and East Service Delivery Area averages, quite a number below, actually. That's not to say that we take our foot off the gas. Our fire safety enforcement officers work really, really closely with all businesses who are what we call repeat offenders. And they work closely to make sure that, one, it's not disrupting their business, it's not disrupting our business, and it's not putting people at risk from our fire engines going all over the place. And I'll take any questions if anybody has any questions on the report before I hand over to Steve to cover the next part. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Dean. Any questions or comments? Councillor Smale.
I'll start off with a sort of curiosity question. The instance of fires due to cooking, is this our old friend the deep fat chip fryer, and are people perhaps needing to be nudged into oven baked chips instead? I take it it's not crepe Suzette.
No, we don't see it. As far as chip pan fires are concerned, it's not that an increase in that respect. But we do have incidents where people, either through drink, drugs, dementia, etc., they leave things on the cooker. So it's that sort of thing in the grill pan, things like that. So yes, although they're coming home drunk, putting the chip pan on isn't making a comeback, thankfully, there are other concerns that we have around the way people live, particularly with over 65s, people getting older, dementia issues, etc. We do have some issues around that, and that's why we always urge our partners to make referrals for anyone that has or anyone that knows family members with dementia. We've done a lot of training around the dementia side of things with fire crews. And the quicker we can get social workers to understand it, we can get into people's houses and make a risk assessment on their living conditions, and if there's anything we can do to help, the better it is for the whole community. So.
Thanks. Councillor Muirhead. Councillor Spiel, you want to come back?
Yes, it's a perhaps more serious question of analysis, and that is to do with the major incidences of arson that we've experienced in Midlothian. I wonder if you're seeing any patterns emerge. The last time we discussed this, there seemed to be two types. One of the very serious arsonists who are deliberately targeting a major asset, and then the lads who are going out into the woodlands with their iPhones and creating conflagrations and amusing themselves that way. But just thinking myself about this, we've got Lawfield, Paradites, we've had the Hub at Gore Bridge, we had the Tesco car wash, we had the barn at Borthwick. And in all of these, it seems to me that the fire raisers do get detected. Maybe the message that we have to put out there between the police and fire is, if anyone's tempted to do this, you will get caught.
I'll maybe just answer that. In terms of the detection part of it, I'll maybe defer that to Kenny very shortly. But I think that's something that we have seen in Midlothian, in a sort of transient sort of, not crime wave, but people moving around various parts, and particularly those groups of young people, and we're seeing a deliberate fire could be just a bin against the building, but then it spreads into the building and all of a sudden that fire becomes far bigger and draws in an awful lot more resource. And I don't know the full detail of what I'm at the school, but I think Ken will probably confirm, I think someone's been detained around that, and I'll maybe defer to him to cover that.
Yeah, thanks, Stevie. Just in relation to the latest serious fire at Paradise, yeah, as confirmed, there's been two 16-year-olds and two 15-year-olds charged in relation to that particular incident. And with regard to communications-wise, we are always keen and we're always proactive. We do go out, and as I did at the weekend, and it always carries a message, just in terms of, one, disgust at the crimes in the first place, but secondly, they will not tolerate and we will hunt people down for it. What we do tend to find with these quips that we put in, though, is that the press tend to drop that part. The message when it goes out, unfortunately, they'll focus very much on there's been an arrest of a 15 and a 16-year-old, and they'll not put in that wee bit. We continue to do it on our own internal Facebook stuff and our own Twitter accounts and things, so that message is getting out there for it. I think in terms of trends and patterns for us, and I know that following the incident at Paradise, I know internally in council wise in terms of assets that you have that are only being used are certainly being looked at in terms of what they can do security wise and trying to prevent any further things. But if it's a crime of assurance, one of our higher tariff individuals who does have a propensity for fire raising and things for it, working with children's services and that individual is now in a secure unit for 6 months, so there is a degree of mitigation for us in that regard, because this was an individual, I think it would be his third or fourth time, I think, that had been involved in serious fire reasons.
Thank you, Councillor Spell.
Just a quick follow-up. We're all looking forward to the community police teams arriving back on the scene in Midlothian, and I would imagine that the question of arson and youth groups will be something that they will have a strong initiative to perform. I wonder if you've given much thought to how you could interact with your existing base of knowledge and the new community teams coming on the scene.
Yeah, absolutely. As we spoke previously about the community action teams, they're very much intelligence-led, and they will focus on areas that have been identified as being those at risk. Within the fire raising and the lower level fire raising, disruption-wise, that's discussed at a weekly basis, you know, at a weekly task and coordinated process, and that will be the main conduit for deployment of these officers. Will be actually focused on what are the community concerns and where they can make the biggest difference.
Thank you, Kenny. Councillor Muirhead.
Yeah, I saw something on the TV the other day, a report about it was referring to down south, and they were talking about the number of fires where, when they investigated, the smoke alarms were not functioning, generally battery operating. It was some high percentage, I'm sure they say something like 40%. I know we've had a lot of initiatives up here and in this area, and you know, installing wired systems and things like that. Is it something, are you aware of what they were saying about doing south, and is it something that we are as concerned about up here as they are down there?
I'm not aware of the reports from down south. It's not something that we've experienced locally, so I suppose if we had, we would maybe be more aware of it. We've been fitting free smoke alarms in the area since 2004, so we have seen an increase in the number of households that have got them. We will still see some households that don't have a functioning smoke alarm, and that's the bit that, if you've got one, you've got to make sure it works, and that's then down to the message that we're constantly putting out. But landlords, to a certain extent, have got that sort of duty of care as well. But if to get any more detail on that, we'd have to go away and look at you know, the minute detail that we would have if needed around the smoke alarms and some of the properties where we're going to fires.
I monitor that through the reports we do for scrutiny, and it flags up occasionally that where we have a fire, either the person's tampered with the smoke detector or the batteries have been removed, but it's minute. And in this particular area, It's not as good in other areas, but in Midlothian, we've not seen a problem, hence we've not needed really to do anything about it, Councillor.
Thank you. Councillor McCall.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. Actually, it was a question for Kevin. With the new build properties that we have, do they have the wired in smoke alarms? I'm very aware of how effective that they are. Don't know if I should confess, but I did burn my toast this morning and set off absolutely everything in the house, and I'm not pleading dementia or anything like that. It's just, yeah, put the toast on and forgot about it. They absolutely work. My poor dog was just beside himself.
Yes, just to confirm for elected members that the housing stock in its entirety, both the historic stock as well as the new build stock, is fully compliant with the retrofitting of hardwired schemes, as has been referenced. We were required to do that by 2015 in terms of the housing quality standard, so all new builds in turn have them fitted.
Thanks for that.
Any other questions? Then can I just ask, raise one point, probably rather peculiar, regarding the loss of power supply and talking about fires when cooking as well. I'll speak hypothetically here, but no power or a power cut are quite rare these days, but in certain areas where perhaps there's areas of heavy construction and development, they may become more frequent. Are we, perhaps as an authority, even looking at developers and other agencies, when there is a power supply loss, are we doing enough to make, particularly in the category that you recognise, single occupancy households in aged over 65, make residents aware of the power supply losses? I know the energy companies do have alerts in place as well. It's just, I don't want to speak to any particular case, but there was an individual who was cooking during the time and lost power supply. Subsequently forgot about it, went out of the house, and subsequent fire. Are we doing enough in that regard? And is there anything that actually we could do or we could improve on?
I suppose the message that we always put out is around never leaving cooking unattended. In terms of getting into the detail of power cuts, yes, we've seen fires resulting from power surges more than power cuts. And certainly I've had personal experience of that happening on it from a construction. I think it was a digger chopped the mains outside and burned a few computers. But again, that was different, and different types of technology. Things have moved on. But in terms of getting that message out and what more can be done, I suppose if there is a power outage, depending on the time of year, vulnerable elderly people are going to be more vulnerable. And if there is support services available to check that they're okay, similar to when the gas goes off, because the boilers, some older boilers, might not automatically fire up again. And so there's loads of risk, but probably more about the vulnerabilities of the people rather than a fire risk on its own. Certainly my opinion of that, I wouldn't have thought that there's a huge amount that we could do more at this point in time anyway.
No, thanks for that. I just thought I'd pose the question. That's reassuring as well. Okay, any other questions or comments? Okay. 5.6, living safely in the home.
Thanks, Chair. Just very briefly before I maybe go on to that, there was just the appendix around our prevention protection activities. I was just going to cover very briefly before I move on. So it will be on page 40 of the pack. We have our enforcement audits covered during the quarter. Below target, but we have had someone retire. We only have one enforcement officer in Midlothian, so if someone retires, some of the work's picked up by the support from the team from East Lothian and the Scottish Borders. We've now got someone new in post, and they're being supported also by National Directorate staff to bring them up to speed because it's a new role for them. So but I'm still comfortable that we will meet our national targets in relation to our high-risk premises. So it's, unless there's any questions on that, it's something that I would be not overly concerned about. In terms of the following page, page 41 of your pack, our home fire safety visit outputs, again, in terms of targeting the most vulnerable at home, we are above our national ambition target set by the Scottish Service. And the area of Mid-East Lothian and Scottish Borders just now that I look at and have responsibility for is the only area in the east of Scotland currently either meeting or above those ambition targets. So it's pleasing to note that Dalkeith and Pennycook contribute significantly to that positive. And as Dean touched already, that was 267 visits delivered in the quarter, and the following page has the split again across, just giving a ward breakdown of where those visits have been delivered fairly consistently across Midlothian. The only other area I was going to touch on the partnership page, which will be, I don't know what page for that, possibly page 43. Yeah, it's really about the youth engagement, which Dean touched on already, and we've heard discussions around the antisocial behaviour. And for us, deliberate fire raising is a measure of our measure of antisocial behaviour. But when we come to work with our new local plan, it's not just about fires. It's about engaging with young people to try and give them a sense of citizenship and trying a bit of peer education and all the other things that youth engagement does. Yes, we're working with offenders in Pullman, and we've got a course that we're delivering and supporting in there, but actually more important for me is what we're doing with the Y2K project. And over the summer we worked with them for about 5 weeks, albeit it's a day a week, but we're drip feeding that information and that message in with that group of young people. What we're looking to do is how can we do that more and expand what we're doing with local youth providers, because they will know the young people and have got a far better engagement with those young people and actually the people that we need to see us in a different way, and also our partners that are involved in the community. Any questions? I can take questions on any of that just now, if possible. Lastly, I think we discussed, we had a number of meetings previously around our Living Safely in the Home pilot in Midlothian. In particular, it stemmed from a smaller pilot that we started in the Cheviot area in the Scottish Borders. The evaluation that this report covers, I'm only really going to touch on really the conclusions. The project itself is about identifying vulnerabilities in people's homes and reducing, look to reducing unintentional harm in a partnership setting. It absolutely links to the service transformation in terms of what the Scottish Service is going to look to develop. And in terms of the conclusions from what we've done in Midlothian so far, there is evidence there that it shows we have, there's, we can't say all of the reduction in the A&E admissions for falls is down to this, but it certainly contributes, and there's quite strong analytical evidence to suggest that. It's a partnership, a strong partnership with our colleagues and partners in Midlothian, and it is something that is going to feature in the Scottish Safe and Well concept as we move forward into the new year with our transformation. And the Midlothian evaluation report has gone to our national directorate as a piece of, it's absolutely best practice in terms of the project, but the fact that it's been very well detailed in an evaluation isn't something that we do particularly well. So I'd like to sort of go on record to thank all the partners that were involved in that, from Health and Social Care and the Merit team, and actually the service users that have fed back to us as well to provide that detail. Happy to take any questions on that.
Yeah, happy to speak to this, Chair. I would think the vast majority members would probably be aware, because we kind of stated our intention about this time last year, actually, to have a review of our estate and looking at premises. Currently within Midlothian, there is six police stations for Dalkeith, Pennycook, Bonnyrigg, Gorebridge, Newbattle and Lonehead. From there, in terms of deploying and deploying resources, actively deploying resources, really Dalkeith, Bonnyrigg and Pennycook are the sort of three main hubs that we have for it. I spoke last year of the potential looking at the kind of co-location and having a kind of deployment hub at the new super depot that was being proposed with council, and we put out a lot of correspondence and engagement round about there, except the fact that we don't have people being actively stationed and deployed from Gorebridge, Lonehead, Newbattle, and obviously if Bonnyrigg was going to come into that with a new station, that would have formed part of that as well. But as part of the review estate, they have identified, because we don't have any individuals routinely being deployed or housed within Gorebridge, Lonehead and Newbattle, these three stations are forming part of the rationalisation of estate. We will be going out and actively, this is my first formal part of consultation, because I felt it was only right that we came to the police board first and foremost, but thereafter I will be actively engaging again with community councils, in particular in that area, all the elected members, local MPs, MSPs and other various groups in the third sector within these localities in terms of consultation. What I can say is that even before the formal announcement of the rationalisation estate, we do have one interested group in terms of that potential for the community asset transfer in Gorebridge for it. But these are the types of discussion that will be being had for it. But it's an early indication that just in certainly as part of the initial estate review, these three premises because they're not being used to deploy, or house police officers on a regular basis form part of that first phase.
Thank you very much for that, Kenny. Any members have any questions or comments on that? Okay. Concludes our meeting then. Thank you very much for attending, everyone, and we'll see you early 2018. Thank you.